this tensor product notation that apparently for some of you was something which was somehow new. Okay? So let me just remind you a bit how this tensor product notation for a tensor product of two matrices or two operators or two whatever works. Okay? So let's suppose we have some Hilbert space which is just spanned by the up and down states. Okay, we just spin up or spin down, and we have some operator A which acts on this Hilbert space. So you have A, which is an operator, and A acts on spin up and gives something, which can be, which we can call some something times up plus something times down. It's just definition of the action. And this operator acting on down can give something times up plus something times down. So just the most general action of an operator in this Hilbert space. Okay? Now, a nice way of encoding this is just to this to say that A is a 2 by 2 matrix with entrances Aij. A12, A11, A12, A21, A22. Spin up is the vector 1, 0, and spin down is the vector 0, 1. Right? Okay. Now we can consider, let's call this space H. Now we can consider a copy, two copies of this page, H1 times H2. So this is parameterized by the states up on the first side and up on the second side, up or rather down on the first side and up on the second side, up on the first side and down on the second side, and down, down. Right? Okay? So this A here is an operator which acts on single spins. Now I can consider the operator A, which I write as A1 plus A2, where this A1, this means that it acts on the first spin or on the first side, and this guy acts on the second side. For example, you will know this very well, for example, this A can be the Z component, for example. And what we are doing is writing the total angle, two total Z component as Z component of the first side plus Z component of the second side, as we did a lot when considering addition of angular momenta, for example. So you know that in this case, for example, JZ acting on a state M, M prime was equal to the angular momentum 1, which just acts on M, we can put a bracket like this, times M prime, plus M times the angular momentum 2, which just acts on M prime. Okay? This is how they, the angular momentum acts. When something acts in this way, when someone acts in this way, we translate this trivial action into a symbol which tells you that JZ, in this case, is JZ of site 1 and do nothing in site 2 plus do nothing in site 1 and jz in site 2. That's just an equivalent notation that some of you might not be as familiar as with this one. But this just means this. JZ1 acts on the first site, does nothing on site 2. JZ2 acts on site 2, does nothing on site 1. Okay? So what is the action of this A1 on some state, for example, on the state plus plus? It just touches the first spin. So it just touches this first spin, and therefore it gives, according to that, A11 times the first spin plus A21 times the first spin down, all this, and the other spin is just a spectator, times spin up. And this is the same as A11 times up, up, plus A21 times down, up, plus 0, let's write the other two components, times up, down, times the components which change the second spin, because we know that this operator doesn't change the second spin. So in the entries which correspond to changing the second spin, I get C. Okay? Etc. I could do the same for the other states. So I would conclude that if I want to represent it in a matrix, A1, where now I have a 4x4 matrix, even though the operator only acts on the first site, I'm working with this big basis, where I have the states up, up here, up, down, down, up, and down, down. This here is nothing but the first column. It tells me that I have A11 here, 0, A12 here, A21 here, sorry, and 0. This is what that told me. Okay? This is what this tells me. And if I do it for the same, for the, all the other columns here, I get 0, A11, 0, A21, A12, 0, 0, A12, A22, 0, 0, A22. Okay? Now, this A1, the way we are thinking of it, is, again, in the same as the angular momenta, it's our operator A, which just acts on one spin and does nothing on the second one. And we use this notation. So this notation in general, when I have a matrix A and B, and I compute the tensor product between them, A tensor B, okay, where this one here is A11, A12, A21, A22, and this one, B11, B12, B22, B21, B22 is equal to the matrix where I pick the first component A, I put here A11, okay, and then I put there the full matrix B. So I put A11 four times because. And then I put the matrix B. B11, B21, B12, B22. Okay? So I pick an element of A and expand it by the full matrix B, multiplying it. This was one element, the element there. So this matrix will have 4x4 entries. They are naturally divided in these 2x2 blocks. And let me write, for example, one more element. This one. This is in the corner of A22. So there is an A22. And then there is the full matrix B in all this block. And this is the element B12. Okay? So everyone would know how to fill in the other empty spaces, right? So I just pick the elements of A and expand each element of A and expand it by the full matrix B. Okay? And this is, of course, this just means that this is exactly what we did here. We pick the element of A, you see, A11, A12, A21, A22, and replace each element by itself times the identity matrix. So A11 became A11 times the identity matrix, A12 times the identity matrix, A21 times the identity matrix, etc. Okay? And for example, A2, which would be A tensor, which would be identity, which would be doing nothing on site 1, tensor A. This would be, now I put the identity, 1 and 1, but instead of 1, I put the matrix A. So I put the full matrix A here and the full matrix A here. A11, A12, A21, A22. A 2x2 block of zeros here, a 2x2 block of zeros here, and then the matrix A again. Okay. So, is everything clear? Yeah? Any question here? This is just how, if you have some system which acts on some space and then you add another spectator space, then you should tensor product it with the identity which just amounts at the matrix level of doing this construction here. Yes?
When you wrote that, you
it does matter, you see, A times 1 and 1 times A. Once I pick this basis, then it matters. Because, for example, here, what this element tells you is that there is no transition between up and between this up and this down, right? It's diagonal here. So if you multiply by something which has spin up, it never becomes something with spin down on the second side. Because the second side is spectator. So if you act with something which is up, up, it gives something up, up, and it gives something, the third one is down, up. But the second spin is never flipped. Right? Because the second space we claim is a spectator. So these zeros here are telling you that the second spin is never flipping. Right? Because you act with some vector, say this vector, which is 1, 0, 0, 0, which is this state here, and you get a component of the same vector, which is up, up, and a component of the third one, which is down, up. So it's always up. It started up, the second spin, it continues to be up. This is what we saw here, right? It was up, and it must end up, by definition, because it acts on site only on the first side. So it might change the first spin, but not the second. This is why we have the zeros at this particular position. Now, in this matrix here, it's the other way around. We cannot change the first spin. So let's write the basis is the same. Up, 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 down, down, up, down, down. Now, if we act with up, up, we get a bit of up, up, and a bit of up, down. So we change a bit the second spin. We might change the second spin. These two elements, they have different second spin. But the first spin is never changed. So the zeros here are telling you that the first spin is a spectator. Right? So once I choose this basis, these zeros tell me that the first spin is a spectator, and these zeros tell me that the second spin is a spectator. Of course, all this is redundant if I'm only acting on one side. If I'm acting on one side, I can put here the vector space of the universe. right? Then I have some huge matrix. It's only interesting to write in this matrix when I will sum this matrix plus this matrix, and I'll have a 4x4 matrix where all elements are non-zero, because the element x on site 1 and 2, on 1 and on 2, because there's some sum. For example, when I have a spin chain Hamiltonian, where the Hamiltonian connect on the several spins, then I will typically use this, and that's what we are going to do next. Okay? Is this clear? Again, it's just a thing that you saw already, but it's just a new notation that might not be completely familiar. But I think when you all consider this addition of angular momenta, this thing you did for sure, and this is nothing but it's exactly the same. It's just saying that it acts on some space and doesn't do anything on the other. But please tell me if it's not clear. Okay? Good. So, any question in general about what we have seen so far about Mathematica or something? I would like to introduce the physical setup for the problem that I want to solve in Mathematica. So, I want to consider a very important spin Hamiltonian, maybe the most important spin Hamiltonian, which is called the Heisenberg spin chain, which was a model introduced, first solved by Hans Bethe as a model for one-dimensional solids, where the interaction between the electrons is just spin exchange. And this is a nice Hamiltonian where we have a site, where we have some spin chain. We can consider it to be open or closed. Let me see which one am I going to do in Mathematica. Let's see. Okay, let's do an open spin chain. So we have some spin chain at each, and we have a couple of sites. You can think of it as a couple of atoms in a metal. It's open, it starts at some point and ends at some point, and at each side I can have a spin up or down. Okay? So there are L sides. So the states are given by a state something like this. Up, down. So how many states are there? Just at each side I have spin up or down. Here there were four states. It was two sides. Now I have L sides. How many states do I have? 2 to the L, right? So there are two possibilities at each spin chain. So there are 2 to the L states. So it's a problem where the dimension of the Hilbert space grows exponentially. A priori it's a tough problem for a brute force solution. But that's what we are going to do, and we will see that we can go up to L equal 10 or 12, and this is more than enough to extract the infinite volume thermodynamics of the system. So what is the, so this is just the kinematics, if you want, just the Hilbert space. The dynamics are given by the following Hamiltonian. So we have the simplest possible you can imagine. You have an Hamiltonian, which is, let me think, how do I want to write it? Okay. Which is just the sum over the sides of the spin chain, n equal 1 up to L minus 1, of an interaction between the spin at position n dotted with the spin at position n plus 1. Okay? So let's write more explicitly what do we mean by this. Is this notation clear for everyone? The spin at position, there is an interaction between two neighboring spins, and this is the Hamiltonian. Now, in that more fancy tensor product notation, we of course understand what this means. This means that each of these guys only acts on sites n and n plus 1, this term here, and does nothing on the rest. Right? So we can put some identities. If we want, say, it's identity, tensor this guy, tensor some identity. So we can write this as a sum of doing nothing on the first sites. How big is this matrix, doing nothing on the first 10 sites? It's a matrix of size 2 to the n times 2 to the n. Okay? This means doing nothing on the first n sites. And n starts now at 0. If I have 0, then... Then I do something. What do? I have my Pauli matrix. So if I am changing to Pauli matrix, I should put a factor of 1 quarter here. Okay? Then I have Pauli matrix I. Let's put I upstairs. I is x, y, or z. Acting on site n plus 1. We are changing a bit the summation, because now we put n sites, n spins before, therefore this is site n plus 1. Then we have the component I acting on site n plus 2. And then we do nothing on the remaining spins, which is therefore we have the identity 2 to how many? How many spins are there left? So we have L. We already used exactly, we already used n plus 1 plus 1. So we already used, so we have left 2 to the L minus n minus 2 times 2 to the L minus n minus 2. And this is the I component. We want s dot s, so we should put here a sum over I equal to 1 up to 3. And this sum, I can either have 0 sites, or I can have up to L minus 2. Okay? I can have L minus 2 sites, and then this interaction at the last 2 sites. Now, we know how to implement tensor products in Mathematica, so we know how to implement this Hamiltonian here in Mathematica, and that's what we are going to do. But I would really like everyone to understand 100% this formula here. That this makes sense, and that this corresponds to this, and that we are discussing a system of spins in a line which have some interaction. So please tell me if this is clear. Now, the ground state energy, which is what we will be looking at, per unit volume, when L goes to infinity, can be computed exactly by using techniques of integrable models, which I can tell you more about if you know. And it's given by minus log of 2 plus 1 quarter. Okay? If you want, this is by the solution by Hans Bethe. It's given by, it's an exactly solvable system, this one. It can be solved exactly, if the spin is 1 half. If you replace spin 1 halves by spin 1s, you cannot solve exactly. So only when you have spin 1 half. Okay? And what we want to do is to compute the ground state energy of this system. And for several Ls, and try to get this large L solution by considering several different Ls. So let me ask, if instead of 1 quarter, if instead of this here, I had a minus sign, would it become simpler or harder? Or what would change? What's the significance of having a positive or a negative number multiplying that sum? What's the physical meaning? Ferromagnetic or anti-ferromagnetic. So the spins either want to be aligned or to be anti-aligned. So which one is simpler? Plus or minus? Minus. Minus, they want to be aligned. They want to lower the energy by just being pointing in the same direction. So minus is the triviality. What's the vacuum? Just spins up, for example. Right? You just want to be completely aligned. If you just have spins up, then that would be the vacuum, and you would compute just the action on this state, and you would get something. Probably minus L over 4 or something like this. Yes, it will be minus L over 4. Because you can write this as total spin of the addition of two spins. And because they are both up, they are always in the triplets. Okay. Is it clear? So if they would be aligned, so if it was a minus, if it were a minus, then we would just write that Sn dot Sn plus 1 is equal to 1/2 of Sn plus 1 square minus Sn square minus Sn plus 1 square. Right? This is just how you open the bracket and this is what you get. And now, the vacuum would be, can you read if I write here? Yes? The vacuum would be, for example, just spins up, because it's ferromagnetic. So this guy would act on the state up, Sn plus Sn plus 1 is the total angular momenta of up, but up is in the triplet, right? You have up plus down, up down plus down up, and then down. So the first term would give 1 times 1 plus 1 minus, then Sn square is just the angular momenta of a spin, 1/2 times 1/2 plus 1, and Sn plus 1 square is 1/2. 1/2 plus 1, and this is how much? This is 2 minus 6 quarters is 3/2. 1 minus 3/2 is minus 1/2. With that 1/2, so this is minus 1/2. With this 1/2, it will give E0 equal minus L over 4 in the large L limit. Otherwise, there is probably an L minus 1 or something like that. Okay? So, the physical quantity is the difference between two energy levels. So we can say that from the antiferromagnetic till the ferromagnetic, there is this log 2, which is the width of the spectrum, by how much the energies vary when you go from the lowest excited state to the highest excited state, which are the two vacua when I flip the signs of the Hamiltonian. Okay? But, okay, in this normalization, this should be the ground state energy. It's non-trivial. The 1/4 in the ferromagnetic case we understand, but in the antiferromagnetic case, there is this log 2. Now, in the antiferromagnetic case, yes?
The two energies, vacuum energies, they're from different Hamiltonians?
Different Hamiltonians.
So how do you compare those? I mean,
here I'm flipping a minus, I'm changing a minus sign. Right? If there was a minus, the energy would be given by this. Right? The spectrum of the two Hamiltonians is just given by flipping the sign of all energy. Right? So the highest energetic state has energy plus L over 4, which is this 1/4 here. And the lowest one lowers this highest maximum value by subtracting log 2. The highest is the ground state of the Hamiltonian with a minus. Just one more comment. What is your physical picture for the vacuum in the antiferromagnetic state? How do you imagine an antiferromagnetic state? Do you know the name of that state? As it's commonly called in condensed matter? When you have the antiparamagnetic state? It's called the Neel state. And it's just a state up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. This is the naive expectation if you have some antiparamagnetic state, right? If the model was classical, this would be the state. If you would have classical spins and not quantum spins, this would be the vacuum energy. Up, down, up, down, up, down. It's just a Ising model in antiparamagnetic case. But you know the model is quantum, and you have a very complicated state, which is a mixture of all states, of many, many singlets. It's really a messy state, and it is wrong to think that the vacuum is just a Neel state, up, down, up, down, up, down. You can consider, this is a good exercise, think that the state is up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, and compute the expectation value of the Hamiltonian. And if I think you get -3/4 or something like this, and it's quite different from the real value. Okay, but it's a good estimate. You can try to do up, down, up, down, up, down, and sandwich the Hamiltonian there and see how good it is when it's not that good. Because it's really a quantum system. The vacuum is not something completely trivial. Okay, so if this is not clear, then the next half an hour or 1 hour will be impossible for you to follow. So please tell me whether everything I've done is clear or not. Yes?
So why are we
summing to L minus 2? We sum up to L minus 2 because what was our logic? What is this identity here? It's how many spins we have before the interaction. So we can add 0 spins, right? And the interaction is on the first two sides. Or the interaction can be on the last two sides, and in that case we have L minus 2 spins. Because the total number of spins is L. So two of them are occupied by this interaction, so we can have at most here L minus 2.
Okay.
Here again, N starts from 0, in that case you have L minus 2. Or N goes to L minus 2, in that case you have here 0.
Spins not initially interacting, or
the spins are interacting. Why not?
Okay, but why do we have to sum them?
I'm considering that each spin interacts with the neighboring. So if you want, this is an interaction energy. All each spin interacts with its neighbors. And the total energy of the system is the sum of interaction energies between neighboring spins.
But it's
this is what you would get in a material where the interactions are short-range.
But in the next equation of the Hamiltonian now, how is that the same?
This is exactly the same as that. Is it not?
I don't know.
Okay, so let's see. So first, what we are doing here is saying that we consider an interaction between n and n plus 1 and do nothing on all the previous one and on the other ones. Doing nothing on the previous and on the ones to the left and on the ones to the right is what these identity matrices here are telling you. Right? You put the identity matrix. How many sides can you have to the left of the interaction? Either 0 sides or L minus 2 sides. Right? Because you need 2 for the interaction. So you cannot have L sides. So the sum goes from 0 to L minus 2. How many spins are on the left of the interaction? And then we put an identity of size 2 to the n by 2 to the n. Because the identity which acts on the Hilbert space of the number of spins which are 2 to the left. Then, after the interaction, you put the remaining size, the identity with the remaining size of the Hilbert space of the spins to the right. And this inner product means sum over component X, component Y, component Z. And this sum is here, from I equal 1 up to 3. Okay?
Okay.
It's good that you ask. Okay. I clicked something that was already done. So let's implement that on mathematics. So maybe let's create a section, or let's create a title called exact diagonalization of the XXX spin chain. It's how it's called. XXX because the interaction in all the three directions of space is the same. So it's XXX, Eisenberg, I never know how to spell Eisenberg. It's a shame, but probably like, I don't know if it's an N or an M.
N.
It's good. Very good. Of the Eisenberg spin 1/2 chain. Okay? So yeah, spin 1/2 isotropic. This XXX means isotropic. Eisenberg spin chain. Very good. So we create now a subsection for defining spin operators. Again, all these sections you can write them by clicking alt 1, then writing, then moving to the next cell, clicking alt 2, and then writing, and this gives you the several kind of types. So let's start. We want to introduce S, so let's start by clearing S, clear all S. This we will use for the spins. Let me increase the zoom a bit. Is this enough? Yes? Please tell me, is this enough? Is this zoom big enough?
Yes.
Yeah. Very good, thanks. So let's clear S in case we didn't split the kernel. And let's say that the spin I is, we have to delay because we did not tell yet if I is 1, 2, or 3, the Pauli matrix I over 2. Okay? What is the dimension of this representation? What's the dimension of the spin 1/2 representation? 2. What is 2? It's the size of the matrix, right? So let's write dimension. Let's delay it. Okay, let's write here in a new cell. Let the dimension be the length of the first spin. Let's run the spins. And I delay this. Please delay it as well. Of course, if you run length of the spin 1, you get 2. And spin 1 is the Pauli matrix sigma x over 2. Why is the length of S1 2? How is mathematical thinking? Why is this 2? It's the length of a matrix. Does it look strange that the length is 2? So we can compute length of A comma B. This gives 2. This is clear. You have 2 elements. But why the length of a matrix also gives 2? Because a matrix is nothing but 2 elements. Each of the elements is the row. But it's counting how many rows you have, which is the same as counting the height of the matrix. So it makes sense that the length of S1 gives 2. Okay? What is the spin of the representation that we are considering? 1/2. And we know that the dimension is 2j plus 1. So the spin is the dimension minus 1 over 2. Okay? And now we want to check the commutation relations. We want to check that S1 dot S2. Let me erase all this stuff about the length. I will erase this stuff about the length, right? Everyone understood. Length of a vector is the number of elements. Length of a matrix is just a vector with rows. So this is our code. Now let's check commutation relations just to be sure that it is no mistake. Is equal to IS3. Let's copy paste and let's write the other ones, which is just cyclic permutation. And let's check end of all this. Check the first one is true, the second is true, and the last one is true. And this is what we call check, and we can delay it as well.
Yeah. Why have you defined the Pauli matrix, the S matrix says delayed evaluation?
SI?
Yes.
I don't care. I think I could define it without it. Let's see. Yeah, I could define it without. It's the same. But the other ones I want to be delayed. The other ones I really want to define as delayed. Dimension, spin, and check I want to define as delayed. Okay? Because now we can do the following. Now we can run, we can ask, what? Did everyone finish copying this?
No.
So, Pauli matrix, dimension, spin, and check. Dimension, spin, and check is three delayed evaluations. I will put them in the same cell. You can do the same if you want. Okay? Can I go? You want some more time? So we clear that, we define that to be Pauli matrices, and we introduce this delayed stuff. And now we can ask, what's the dimension? We write dimension and run. Dimension is 2. What's the spin? We run, spin is 1/2. We can check computation rates. We uncheck and we get true. Okay? This is what we would expect. So in case we forget, we can now ask Mathematica, what's the dimension, the spin, and we can ask her to check the computation relations. Imagine I wanted to do spin 1 instead of spin 1/2. Okay? So let's... please let me know if I'm going too fast. So let's write here. Suppose we want spin 1. So if we would like spin 1, we will define S differently. How do we define S for spin 1? What are the spin matrices for spin 1? This is the spin 1, is also known as, for SU2, it's also known as what representation? Sorry? No. Ah, okay, sorry, SO3, you said SO3. Yeah, it's the representation that we use to define SO3, yeah? Which is the adjoint representation. It's the three-dimensional representation. So spins, a way of defining the matrices of spin 1, which will now be 3 by 3 matrices, they will act on spin 1, is by using the epsilon symbol and using the structure constant. So let's try. Epsilon of something, 2 underscores, because it can be more than one element. It's the same as we did yesterday. It's equal to the signature of the list A. Okay? And then Si, we would say, is equal, okay, to minus I table of epsilon I j k, where j would go up to 3 and k would go up to 3. Okay, we are just using the structure constants to write down the spin generate the spin matrices. Okay, this is exactly using the syntax that we introduced yesterday. Epsilon now of 1, 2, 3 gives the signature of the list 1, 2, 3, which is exactly 1. And I'm building the spin generators using the structure constants, which are, in the case of SU2, epsilon ijk. I can ask Mathematica, what is S1? S1 is now this. This is the spin matrix in higher representation. And now, we can ask, what's the dimension of this representation? What will I get if I run dimension? What will I get if I run this dim? Why? Why will I get 3? What was important in the way we defined above to get 3 now? It was delayed. If it was not delayed, I could define it without delayed, then I would get 2 when I defined in SU2. But it was already defined to be 2. It will not run again when I would ask what's the dimension. But because it's delayed, now the dimension I get 3. Because Mathematica will evaluate again the right-hand side, and now the spins are something else. What's the spin? We can ask, and Mathematica will tell 1. And we can ask her to check the commutation relations, and she will tell me that I did no mistake with this minus I. So if I don't put a minus I here and put 1 or whatever, I will get a false here. For example, I erased the sign, I got false. So I put back the correct sign. Okay, so it's good to be sure that we don't do any mistakes. Okay, so let's move on to considering the problem that we want to solve, which is the diagonalization of this Hamiltonian. So let's delete all this dimension and checks. Suppose we want spin 1. Let's comment this, because we don't want spin 1. This was just to show you, to remind you that the adjoint was the spin 1 representation and to show you how delayed evaluation works. Let's erase this and please run the definition of the S's with the Pauli matrices again. So everyone run S1 and you should get this. I want no one with the S's being the spin 1 S's. We want spin 1 halves. Okay? So let's create a section, a new section now. Does everyone have S1 giving this matrix here? S1 should give 1/2 of sigma x for everyone. So let's create a new section called tensor product, where we introduce the tensor product. This was just for one spin so far. So we know how to do it. We just say that circle times is equal to Kronecker product. Done. We can move to another section. Let's do some check, just to be sure that we are not doing any mistake. Let's, for example, compute S1, scape C star scape S1, and let's sum over SX, XY, XZ. Let me remind you that to enter this circle times, it's scape C star, and then scape again. Okay? This would be the total angular momentum operators. Let's compute the eigenvalues of this guy. What should we get? It's what we get. We get minus 3/4 and 1/4. Okay, which is precisely what we expect. Look here, what we have is exactly this inner product, right? A spin with spin. We are computing two of them. What are the possible, what are the eigenvalues? It's total angular momentum minus this guy, minus this guy. Now, these two, they are always given by this here. 1/2, 1/2 plus 1. 1/2, 1/2 plus 1. It's just a property of being spin 1/2. The addition of them can be either 1 or 0. If it's 1, I get this result, which is minus 1/2 times this 1/2 minus 1/4. That's the minus 1, that's the 1/4 there. If it's 0, I get minus 3/4. If I get 3/4 if I do all this. Minus 3/4. Yes, minus 3/4. So I have minus, this is 3/4. 3/4 is twice 3/4, I divide by 2, I get 3/4. So I get this minus 3/4. So this is the angular momentum of the two of them having combined into either the singlet or the triplet. It's exactly what we expect. Okay? Now, we want to introduce now all the other chain. So now we want to introduce another section. And we introduce the Hamiltonian. Okay. Now, for the Hamiltonian, we need to introduce also the identity matrix. So as yesterday, we can use exactly the same notation, escape, dsi, escape. This gives this identity. We can define the identity of n sides, n being not the size of the matrix, but how many sides we have, to be the identity matrix of size 2 to the n. Okay? Even better. Later, we might want to change from SU2 to SU3. To a 4, sorry. From spin 1 half to spin 1. So let's not write 2, let's write dim, which is the dimension. Right? Why not? Later, if we want to change for spin 1, we just run the code again and dim will be 3. Right? Good. So let's run. Slash dsi for 3 spins, 8 by 8 identity matrix. We can ask to see in matrix form. Okay? This is 3 spins. Now, what would the Hamiltonian be? The Hamiltonian will be exactly what we wrote there. Let's write the summand and then add the sum symbols. So, is everyone with me now? Or are you still typing? Okay, let me go on. So, we have n spins. Let's look at the blackboard. Then we have slash circle times the matrix S. Let's use S. There is 1/4 of Pauli matrix, but we can use S. We have Si. Then we have another Si. And then we have the identity on the remaining side, which are L minus N minus 2. Okay? This is what we want to sum. Okay? So let me copy here again so that you can see. To enter these shortcuts, you use this. For the circle times, scape, C star, scape. For the identity, scape, DSI, scape. Now we sum. To sum, of course, scape, sum, scape. We write a sum symbol. We select the sum symbol and click control equal to go down. And we sum from I equal 1 and then control 5 to go up to 3. Now you go to the beginning of the expression, and we add the sum over n. Sum, again, control equal to go down, n equals 0, up to, control 5, up to L minus 2. Okay? Since we want the energy, and we know that energy is an extensive quantity, let's compute the energy per unit length. So let's divide here by 1 over L outside. So let's compute 1 over L. So this is the Hamiltonian divided by the length, so that the eigenvalues supposedly should converge as L goes to infinity. The energies are extensive. Okay? And now which L do you want to take? Which L do you propose? What length? Sorry? Five would be a good one. Let's make a table of several Hamiltonians, and then we can use whichever one we want. So let's make a table of Hamiltonians when L runs from 2 to some maximum, and let's define the maximum here to be, say, 10, for example. So we start with Hamiltonians of size 2 up to 10. And let's call this vector of Hamiltonians Hs. Hs to denote Hamiltonians. Up or down? This? Welcome. Okay, so we define some maximum, 10. This we should run. And then we define some H to be a table of Hamiltonians from starting at size 2 going up to size maximum. And we should put a semicolon at the end, otherwise we'll get some huge output. Notice that for 10 we have a 2 to the 10 matrix. We can ask Mathematica, how much is 2 to the 10? It's a lot. It's a, quite a big matrix. We are we will diagonalize 1,000 by 1,000 matrix. So let's just run this H. So this will take a while, maybe 10, 20 seconds to run. It's saving all these big matrices in the memory. Okay. So now we can ask, for example, what is the first Hamiltonian of this list? What is it? It's the 2 by 2 Hamiltonian. It's a 4 by 4 matrix. And indeed, here it is. The second Hamiltonian, it's the Hamiltonian with 3 sides, should be an 8 by 8 matrix. And here it is. So who is having problems? Who doesn't get this when running HS2? Are you still copying or do you have some issues?
It doesn't have appropriate bounds, so I guess it's max.
Right? You didn't define that. Yeah, you just define some max to be 10 or something. This? Which one do you want? Identity matrix? The epsilon was not used. The epsilon we didn't use. It was important, I asked you. Come and spin one and run spin one half again. So comment, spin one, parts, and be sure that you are in... Roger, circle times equal Kronecker product. Don't write the symbol for the... Okay. It didn't work? To ask for what's the second element of this list of Hamiltonians? That's the Hamiltonian of length L equal 3, right? That's the 8 by 8 matrix. It will think that now I want this huge list acting on something. It will just write a huge list and then the bracket 2. It will give garbage. Because you don't want this list acting on something. You want the element 2 of this list. Okay. Is someone having trouble entering the Hamiltonian? No? Okay, so I will move on. So now that we have these Hamiltonians, we can diagonalize them and compute their eigenvalues and check how it's going. Okay? So let's do the following. Let's make, let's define TB, which will be a table, to be the table of the eigenvalues. So we'll have a table. We put here L, okay? And then we compute the eigenvalues. So we put HS, L minus 1, okay, because when L will be 2, this is the first Hamiltonian. We start at 2 in Hamiltonians. We need at least 2 spins. We compute the eigenvalues. We sort them. And we take the first one. Okay? And this, we will create a search table from L starting at 2 up to the maximum. We will do it for all our Hamiltonians. Okay? And let's do something funny, which is the following. Let me show you something. So if you want, imagine I have here outside. Enter this, but don't run it, please. You don't get this? Maybe just the zoom, that you have some different zoom on.
I get the very, very large output.
Very large output?
Yeah.
You need these double brackets, right, to extract the element 2. Otherwise, you'll get this huge list. Now, sometimes you want to measure how long it took to evaluate something, but you don't want your object to be the output of timing. Let me be more precise. Suppose I want to do the following. Factor integer, 10 to the 100. Okay, this was too fast. This was too slow. 10 to the 20 plus 2, 10 to the 40, something which is more or less challenging. Okay, this is already a bit challenging. And let's ask timing. And this gives me the timing. But I want the factor integers, the decomposition of integers of this, to be this factor integer. And then I want to ask the timing. Now if I run fi, I get this stuff with the timing in the first slot. I don't want. So it's very simple. Just put a bracket here. And now fi is just defined as factor integer, and I apply timing of this. The outcome is this, but if I run fi, I just get what I want. Okay? So we want to do the same here. We want to check how long does it take to run this table. So we put a bracket in the beginning and at the end, so that the TB is just the table, and then we can apply timing, or if you want a more human timing and not the time, the computer time, you can apply absolute timing. This is a bit more, this is probably what you want. It's the same. You choose timing or absolute timing, whatever you want. Okay? So let's run it. I think it will take 9 seconds. In my computer, it takes 9 seconds, I think. By the way, I'm curious how long it takes in yours. If you can run and tell me. This doesn't look like... Sorry?
It's a very long output that's generated here in the sample.
No, but then you didn't do it right. Did you forget / eigenvalues? Yes? Good. Wow. Why is it? It's making fun of me or what? How come? So long. Is it also taking forever for you? Wow. How come? Let's abort. Let's click Alt dot and abort and change maximum to 9. And try again. Yeah, but abort. Click Alt dot. Or just go to evaluation in the menu and click abort. How come? How come? HS, blah, blah, eigenvalue sort first, blah, blah, blah. Let's do some ridiculously small maximum, like 6. Okay, I understood what's the problem. Good. That's a good lesson. Yeah. So, the problem is that this matrix, this HS2, it's a matrix with rational numbers. So Mathematica will try to find the exact eigenvalues. She will not be happy with numerical eigenvalues. But of course, for big matrices, we don't expect her to diagonalize a 2 to the 10 by 2 to the 10 matrix, exactly. So we should tell her that the entries are numeric. So at the end of this table, let's write /n. Okay? When we define this HS. Now they are numerical entries. Okay? Now they are numerical. And now we can try to run again what we had with maximum being equal to 10. And now it will run. Okay? So we run maximum equal to 10. It should run again HS. It will take a while, like a few seconds, and then you can run again this step. Now did it run? No? Yes? How long did it take, by the way? 1.4. Oh, I'm humiliated. For 10? You get 10? It's very sad. Okay. My computer is 2 years old, that's what I get. Good. Okay, so maybe you can do maximum, maybe you can put 12 in the maximum then. Try putting 12, because 12 for me will take too long, but you can have 12. I think I can do 11 in useful time, but you can probably do 12. I can also do 12, but it takes like 5 minutes. Do you get 12? Does 12 work? No? For 12? Really? Wow. How could it?
Yeah, I did.
No, but here it's 10. You are only running 10, up to 10.
Why?
I think you didn't run probably max.
Oh.
You should run HS before. Okay, does it work, 12? No. Yeah, it will take 1 minute or two. Yeah, let's stay with n equals 10. Let's stay with n equals 10. Let's abort and go back to n equals 10. Yes. Yes, that would be a good idea. Yeah. We will define H with L. Instead of defining a table, we'll define H with L equal H with L equal this. We will do the following. If you want to memorize, okay, let's do the trick of memorizing. Let's abort. If it doesn't abort, sometimes you need to quit the kernel. You might have noticed that this might be what is happening. You have to quit the kernel and then run again what you ran before. I recommend that you delete stuff. So save as another name and try to keep it as clean as the one that I am running here. Okay, so we need to run it again. And here it is, the identity matrix, the max. And now if you want to do it in your way, we'll do the following. H of L is equal to H of L, which is equal to this stuff here. And now we would put here H of L. Okay, so we'll define H of L here outside. H of L, if you give me L, it is delayed. And then once I choose some L, I define HL to be equal to this. Okay? So now if we define it in this way, if we run this table, we can run it. It takes a few seconds. You see, it's computing. There is this symbol here, and it's written upstairs running. It's done. But if I run it again, it's instantaneous. Okay? If I would run it up to 9, then if I would run up to 10, only one would be computed. Okay, so now I can run HS, and it doesn't take any time. Okay, this stuff I imagine that you already copied, so I will also erase, delete this. Okay, and then we have our table of 10 of our 10 eigenvalues. Okay. Now, this took me 9 seconds, for you 1 second, right? But you can then play with increasing the size of the matrix, and then it will take a while. What we can do now is the following. We can define a second table of Hamiltonians, which is defined as the previous list of Hamiltonians, where we apply an operation to each of the Hamiltonians, which is called sparse array. So let's apply sparse array to each of them. Applied to each of them is this at symbol. Let me scroll down. Okay? And let's put a semicolon at the end. And let's run this. Okay? Now, what is sparse array? Okay, actually, maybe, I think we are running maybe a bit, maybe it's better to make a break now and finish after the break. What do you say? Should we go for finish the diagonalization or make a break now? Break? Okay, so let's start at half past.